It's Monday, May 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hi, and welcome. Coming up, tension remains high in Syria amid a ceasefire and prison unrest. North Korea's leader announces plans to ruling party members.
Suddenly, he became a very noticeable candidate, and people were flocking towards him.
Will Philippine voters select the so-called Trump of Asia? The election is today. Meanwhile, U.S. Republicans begin to deal with the reality of their own Donald Trump. Also ahead, Janet Jackson has something new on the way. It's all on today's International Edition. Government forces have failed to regain control of a Syrian prison where nearly 800 mostly political detainees have been maintaining a revolt for nearly a week. Syrian opposition leaders warn of a possible massacre of detainees in Hama Central Prison, calling on the international community to take urgent action. Conditions at the prison have deteriorated since government forces stormed it Friday and managed to seize the facility's food stocks, according to political activists. The prison has been surrounded by government forces since Monday after inmates rioted and seized guards. The immediate cause for the riot was the planned transfer of some detainees to the notorious Saidnaya prison north of the capital, Damascus. That's run by the country's feared Syrian military intelligence branch. 46 detainees were released by the regime last week before talks broke down. Meanwhile, a 72-hour ceasefire extension in Aleppo provided some breathing space for residents. Displaced families returned home and schools reopened. Abu Amar is a teacher in Aleppo. He says they had to stop classes for 2 weeks, and now they will begin making up work that was missed while the schools were closed. Before the latest ceasefire, Aleppo had seen days of heavy fighting that killed nearly 300 civilians, including 57 children. Well, next up is our social media segment. And now coming into the studio for that is G. Abby Lee, who settles in behind the microphone. Hello, G.
I'm ready. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good. What are we going to talk about today?
A little bit of Donald Trump and a bit of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. So it's an eclectic mix, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Say what you will about these guys, but they definitely know how to stay relevant, and that is an important skill set. Let's start with Trump.
Sure. Why is he in the headlines again, or should we ask?
For something he said over the weekend. Now, we talked about Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren's statement on him Tuesday, and he replied to that statement on Friday. He called her names and questioned her Native American heritage. On Facebook, he wrote, "Goofy Elizabeth Warren. Hillary Clinton's flunky has a career that is totally based on a lie. She's not Native American." He went on but ended the post by adding, "I say she is a fraud." His supporters expressed their frustration with what they perceive as the Republican Party's lack of support for Trump, and people who are not fond of him ask whether he has insults past a third grade reading level.
Wow. Ouch. Did she have a comeback?
For sure. She tweeted, "Goofy, for a guy with the quote-unquote best words, that's a pretty lame nickname. Weak." More than 13,000 people liked it. She also wrote, "I called out Donald Trump on Tuesday. 45 million people saw it. He is so confident about his counterpunch, he waited until Friday night." Lame.
Wow, and we have a few more months of this. Well, let's move on to North Korea. What's the buzz there?
Well, as you know, many reporters were in the and continue to be in the country's capital to cover the Workers' Party Congress that began on Friday. And what I see online is that some of them are very candid about their impression of what's going on in Pyongyang. They include Anna Fifield from Washington Post and James Pearson from Reuters. During her Periscope and Facebook Live, Fifield even mentioned that her minders are not aware of her live streaming from her hotel room because they don't have access to these accounts. But I think if they wanted to find out, it'd be quite easy because her hotel room is probably bugged and there are probably hidden cameras inside the room. So, of course, VOA reporters were not included in that press corps because the Kim Jong-un regime do not really enjoy the unbiased and free reporting we provide to that country. But before I joined the agency, I had visited North Korea as a journalist, and it's very hard to do anything on your own because there are two minders following one person every single time. But so all I'm saying is that I wish everyone the best on their return flight from the Hermit Kingdom. Jim?
Well, one journalist and two minders, they say three's a crowd, right? Thanks for the wrap-up, G. And you can tweet your questions if you have them, comments as well, too, @VOA_IE. And if you like, you may tag myself and G on those tweets. We are @VOA Stevenson and @GAbbyLee. Here are some of the top stories trending now in Asia. 73 are killed in an Afghanistan bus and tanker crash. Afghanistan executes 6 terror convicts. Pakistan rights activist killed in Karachi. China envoy visits Djibouti. It's the site of their first overseas base. 40 students in India sickened by meal at school. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at our website, voanews.com, and also check out our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. North Korea's state news agency says President Kim Jong-un has told a ruling party Congress his country will not use nuclear weapons unless its sovereignty is threatened by other nuclear powers. Kim described his 5-year plan to simultaneously develop nuclear weapons and boost the country's economy. However, analysts say that that plan is doomed for failure because of the heavy international sanctions North Korea will be facing for developing its nuclear program. Dr. Catherine Moon, the inaugural holder of the SK Korea Foundation Chair in Korea Studies and senior fellow at the Brookings Center for East Asia Policy Studies, tells VOA's Steve Miller more about the Workers' Party Congress, which opened Friday and is lasting several days.
We shouldn't be so surprised that it's the first time in 36 years. Frankly, the surprise is that he's holding it so quickly into his tenure as the new leader, that is Kim Jong-un. His father, during his entire tenure, his father, Kim Jong-il, never held a party congress. And all of the party congresses that were held, six of them, were between 1946 and 1980, all under the tenure of the grandfather, Kim Il-sung. So the history of the party congress is such that even though they were supposed to meet every 5 years, they've never done so. And it's been an erratic or inconsistent schedule of meetings. And when they do, they have a reason for doing it. They don't just call the party congresses for the sake of calling them. And the reason this time, many believe, and I agree, is for Kim Jong-un to form a consolidated power base. He has no power base of his own, no revolutionary credentials. The military was and can never be his power base. And so the party is about all he has. And so he needs to establish his presence squarely there. And of course, people talk about reshuffling some Central Committee members, et cetera, but we will see.
Kim's comments to a reported 3,400 delegates came as South Korean monitors remained on high alert over the threat of further nuclear-related testing by the North in the near future. The United Nations toughened sanctions against Pyongyang in March after the communist state's fourth nuclear test and the launch of a long-range rocket that was widely seen as a disguised ballistic missile test. Voters in the Philippines select a new president today. The four main contenders have issues including economic gains, security alliances, and foreign policy of the current administration. Those, of course, on the minds of voters. In national surveys of the past 2 weeks, controversial and foul-mouthed 71-year-old Davao City Mayor Rodrigo Duterte has pulled into a double-digit lead over his rivals, who have all been within 1 to 5 percentage points apart throughout the 3-month campaign period. His closest rival, Senator Grace Poe, who has traded the number 1 and 2 spots with him throughout the campaign period, seems to take a more pragmatic approach to issues. International Edition's Sarah Williams explores these two contenders with Raisa Robles, a journalist, blogger, and author.
Yes, it's surprising. He was not a candidate who was seriously looked at in December, but suddenly he became a very noticeable candidate and people were flocking towards him. And even those, the middle class, the educated, the wealthy, wanted him. You know, Filipinos are looking at the possible return of a strongman rule if Mayor Rodrigo Duterte wins this Monday. The surveys right now, and we really don't know how accurate the surveys are because there are so many of them, says that 1 in 3 or 33% of voters will be voting for him. And that puts him around 11 percentage points ahead of the second strongest candidate, Senator Grace Poe. Now, we do not know if the recent revelations about allegations of ill-gotten wealth will have an impact on voters, because sometimes, you know, the impact comes several days after. Mm-hmm. The last survey that put him ahead was done on May 3.
Well, now, what about those revelations about Duterte's wealth? Could you tell us a bit about those?
Yes, it turns out that he has so many bank accounts and that money had been going in and out of his bank accounts to the tune of about over 2 billion pesos. Not only that, he also has so many properties, and most of these are under the name of his children.
Well, meanwhile, his leading opponent, I guess you could say, Senator Grace Poe, what is she campaigning on?
It's rather strange. Initially, she was campaigning on the same platform as Tuwid na Daan, you know, the straight and narrow path, and that's the slogan of the administration candidate. The reason why she is popular is that she is the daughter, the adopted daughter of the late movie star Fernando Poe Jr. I'm not sure exactly what her campaign platform is. It's a hodgepodge. She is promising a lot of things to many people. Climate change, she is well instructed by her advisors, but during the last debate, it shows that she did not have the grasp of how a presidency works. But she's quite popular.
Philippine journalist Raisa Robles, who is speaking to us from Manila. Here in the United States, Republican politicians are coming to terms with a brash presidential candidate of their own. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins me here in the studio with how lawmakers are reacting.
Well, Jim, Congress is getting back to work this week after a week-long recess, and they will be returning with Republicans having a very good idea who will be representing them at the top of the ticket as their presidential nominee in for the rest of the year and into the fall. That is Donald Trump. And many lawmakers that I'd spoken to sort of had an inkling that this was likely, but they will be getting back to work with that, in fact, confirmed. And it should be an interesting time to be a reporter on Capitol Hill.
Well, from the Speaker of the House on down, there is lukewarm support for Donald Trump within the ranks. Speaker Ryan saying that he just couldn't come out and support Trump at this time. But it leaves the door open for, obviously, a future endorsement.
Right. And we are, in fact, expecting that Donald Trump might be on Capitol Hill this week, perhaps Thursday, to speak with House Republicans and perhaps to have a side meeting with Speaker Paul Ryan off at the Republican headquarters here in Washington, D.C. Ryan is not ruling out throwing his support behind Donald Trump, but he wants to sort of feel him out on some things and see if, in fact, Trump merits that support. Donald seems to be somewhat peeved with this turn of events and has suggested that, well, either he will or he won't, and if he doesn't, maybe I don't need him anyway. I don't think that he's quite said it in those terms, but that's sort of the message that he's tried to convey. On the Senate side, there are a number of Republicans who have been sort of on the fence, but a number who have said all along that they intend to support the Republican nominee, whoever that might be. It's going to be an interesting week to be up there and to feel out some of the members who have yet to stake out a position, just how they handle this. There are a number who are up for re-election, and Donald Trump could very well be a complicating factor in their re-election bid.
And that may very well be the root of a lot of this discontent, is the fact that there are a lot of members of Congress up for re-election in this cycle. For the time being, Donald Trump has probably the shortest coattails of any presidential nominee we've ever seen.
What Republicans fear is that he may have negative coattails.
Yes.
That he could drive up the anti-Trump vote to such an extent that they just vote against Republicans all up and down the ballot, and that it could be something of a bloodbath. Now, no one knows for sure whether that will happen. And in fact, Donald Trump points out with some legitimacy here that he has brought millions of voters into the Republican fold to vote for him. The question is whether in November that those new voters that he has brought in will be outweighed by many millions and millions more who could show up to vote against him. And that's what we just don't know. So I have no idea how it'll play out, but it sure is going to be interesting to watch.
Oh, it's always fun to watch the strategies as the so-called shifting sands take place on Capitol Hill and within politics. And now I guess we've got a veritable sandstorm blowing. So to see where this goes will be a lot of fun. But always with his eyes shielded in a clear view is Michael Bowman, our VOA Senate correspondent. Mike, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
And be sure to visit voanews.com for more on this story. And you can follow us on Twitter as well at @VOA_IE. By the way, while you're on Facebook, like us at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sagan, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. Janet Jackson has been around music all of her life, but now she's venturing into a new realm of her life. VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee stops by to talk about a soon-to-be member of those recognized every Mother's Day.
Does not come as any surprise because back in April, Janet Jackson released a video explaining that she and her husband were trying to start a family, which is why she had to postpone her tour. She was smack dab in the middle of a world tour at that time, but no one really knew. She said, "We're trying to start a family." And because she's 49 years old, no one really knew what that meant because, you know, typically a woman of a certain age will have a very difficult time having her own child, conceiving her own child. Well, I think we can say it's official now that she is expecting her first child with her husband, Wissam Al-Manna, who I guess this will be his first child as well. He is 41 years old, I believe. They've been married since 2012. In addition to, and I don't think this was really an announcement, but the reports were released today, and then we got a new song from Janet Jackson called Damn, baby.
No doubt this is going to be inspiring for years to come.
So, I mean, we're all very excited for her. Again, I think this is something that she's always wanted to do over the years. She's kind of talked about wanting a family and wanting to settle down. And so I think for her, it's a great thing for our fans. We're just hoping that after it's all said and done, she will actually go back out on tour.
Yeah, it's so tough for artists to start a family because they're always on the go. There's always something happening. They're in the studio, they're touring, they're doing whatever. And it's great. It's great news, especially, you know, the Jackson family has had some tough times over the past few years.
Sure.
And this is a bit of good news for them.
Absolutely. And this is great news for me because anyone who listens to me on VOA 1 knows that I absolutely love a baby bump watch. I live for this kind of stuff. So I don't know if anyone's more excited. Maybe Janet, maybe.
All right. Well, Janet, if you're listening, you know, you got to put Shauna on the baby shower
list.
Party list
yes,
here.
Yes, please.
You know, so any due date? Do we know that?
No, we do not know. We don't know how far along she is. And I'm going to assume, even though she is a very private woman, again, we didn't know for a year that she was even married, but I'm going to assume because she has announced it and because we heard in April that she was trying, that she's probably fairly early on. And let me say, she has not announced it.
Right.
It's been reported.
Right.
But I think it's safe to assume she's pretty early on.
Well, maybe we could do the math on our own. I don't know. End of the year or beginning of next year, something like that.
I'm thinking maybe, yeah, maybe beginning of next year.
Yeah.
Let's say beginning of next year.
All right.
You want to make a wager? Okay, now.
Here we go. The baby pool has started. You heard it here first.
Why not?
Shauna Renee, host of VOA Soul Lounge, thanks so much for stopping by with the great news.
It was fun. Thank you.
And a belated Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, and thanks for listening to International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Burma has made extraordinary progress in the last year, including holding successful nationwide parliamentary elections in November 2015 and the formation in March 2016 of a democratically elected civilian-led government. However, significant problems remain. Chief among these are restrictions on freedom of speech, association, and assembly, human rights violations in ethnic minority areas, and restrictions on members of the Rohingya population. The new government has already demonstrated its commitment to addressing these issues, either through action or public statements. After Aung San Suu Kyi publicly stated April 7th the new government would try to release political prisoners, a judge in Tharawadi Township Court on April 8th closed the cases and ordered free 69 students and activists held on politically related charges. President Tin Chaw granted amnesty to an additional 63 political prisoners, including five journalists, on April 17th. Last year, there was a significant decrease in reports of violent abuses by the military of non-combatant and civilian populations in conflict-torn ethnic minority border areas, and the previous government signed a nationwide ceasefire agreement with eight ethnic armed groups on October 15, 2015. However, fighting continued between the military and ethnic armed groups in Kachin, Shan, Karen, and Rakhine states. The Rohingya, a stateless ethnic minority primarily residing in Rakhine State, were singled out for special restrictions. There were prohibitions on movement within the country. The Rohingya were required to fill out forms for permission to stay overnight in another village and to register on the guest list with the village. The previous government did make efforts to quietly resettle an estimated 25,000 Rohingya to their villages of origin. The new government also has said Rakhine State issues will be part of the newly formed National Peace and Reconciliation Center's mandate. The United States is committed to advancing universal rights, building partnerships that will move us forward, and helping every person live up to their potential. On human rights, every country, including our own, has room to improve. And in cases like Burma, we are committed to working with the new government and civil society to support reforms that contribute to Burma's historic transition. In Burma, an elected civilian government has begun to free political prisoners, said Tom Malinowski, Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human human rights and labor. We will do everything we can to support it in tackling reform of the country's laws and constitution, seeking peace with ethnic minorities, and addressing the human rights and humanitarian challenges of the Rakhine State.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.